The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast for people who like the Doom Patrol. And there's no Doom Patrol book at the moment, so we're waiting for it to return.
Yes, what's up, patrollers? I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can reach us on our Facebook page. And our episodes are all available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbean.com. And you can also check us and some other cool comics-related podcasts on the Inner Circle Comics website.
Ooh. Wow, you really raised the energy then. I'm obviously got to come up to your standard. You're not going to come meet me where I was. Anyway... I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we have a sentient show Twitter account, which is Wilfred at WFDpod.
Hi, Wilfred.
Hi, Wilfred.
Hello, humans.
He's been on fire lately, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. He looks after us.
He does.
So this week on the show, we are going back to the classic, very first era of the Doom Patrol, back to the 60s. We're looking at issues 105 and 106 from the Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani run, which is some really cool stuff we've got coming up.
Yep.
Yes. Paul, your energy levels are a bit low on this episode. Is everything all right? How's your week been?
It's been a bus of a week that's backed over me. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I'm okay, but Jesus. I could be better. No, actually, I don't want to talk about it. Let's talk about it. Anyway, can I talk about DC's Legends of Tomorrow, or D-Clot, as we like to call it on Waiting for Doom?
Give us the D-Clot download, sir.
D-Clot, what the hell are you doing?
Uh-oh.
I've got to ask. The latest, I just want to talk about the latest episode.
Okay.
Now, there's a few things going on in D-Clot these days. The last episode, I don't know if you watched it, it was set in the 1950s.
Right.
But I reckon there was a fight in the writer's room when they made this one because everyone was going in different directions as far as what happened in the plot. So, you know, let's do a 1950s horror film and, oh, let's do a sort of 1950s, you know, homemaking comedy. Let's do... a study on lesbians, and it all happened in one episode. And it was just like three shows going in a different direction all at once. I really enjoy working out how they're not going to have Jax and Professor Stein in the one spot every episode, so they can't turn into Firestorm.
Right.
You could have this. What's your favorite episode of D-Clot? It's the one where they try to kill Vandal Savage at the end, and he doesn't die. You know. It's that one.
Uh-oh. Is the sheen wearing off a little bit from D-Clot then?
It's like a cake where I love all the elements and they just mix the whole thing wrong time after time.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Like, the number of times, like, so many episodes end with them trying to kill Vandal Savage with this bloody knife.
Right.
That's, you know, and they don't kill him. And instead of recovering the knife or grabbing his body or chucking him in the sun, they just leave. They just keep leaving, and then they keep going, oh, we're going to be a team? Yeah, we'll be a team. And bloody hell. And, you know, they never let Firestorm become Firestorm. In the last episode, there's the bit where the knife is in Kendra's handbag, in a purse.
Right.
And she's reaching in, and I was thinking, oh, they put Ray in the handbag. That'll be smart. He'll be in there as well. And no, Ray's in the other room sitting in a wheelchair pretending to be a patient. Because that's what you want to do with the guy who can shrink. Anyway, so yeah, having a bit of a rant.
Go for it. So just, you know, let it all out.
I just don't know what D-Clot's doing. They need to get rid of Vandal Savage, or every single episode will be them failing time after time. So I don't know. They need a new purpose.
That's what I said the episode we were discussing Valentina Vostok. I thought they need a something other than Vandal. to go after each episode because, it's going to wear thin pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And clearly so it is.
The best thing they could do is defeat Vandal Savage at the end of the first season and somehow screw up the time stream and then have to go on missions to fix the time stream where they're screwed it up.
Wow. Why aren't you in the writer's room now?
Yeah. So, D-Clot, you're on notice.
Ooh, geez. Wow. Sounds like they might be approaching Arrow levels of enjoyment.
I just... It hurts more. I care more about D-Clot than I do about Arrow. Like, I love Captain Cold. I love... You know, I love the Ray. I love Professor Stein. I'm okay with Jax. It's just... What are they doing?
It's a bitter tasting cake, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a nicely iced turd at the moment.
Jeez, I think I found the episode title for this week.
What about you, Mike? What would you like to bitch about this week?
Well, work, but I won't bore the listeners with that. Work's been crazy and has been taking up a lot of my time. So I've not actually caught up on my comics pile to yet to be read. I'm currently up to, I think, like 4 or 5 issues of Dr. Fate. And I was going to get started on them. Then I realized that Dr. Fate number 10 comes out this week. So I thought, I'll just wait for that and then add that to the stack and continue on from there. So I haven't really read much. I've been playing a bit more of Marvel Legendary to no one's surprise at all. I won't bore everyone this week with it. It's other than to say I got the Dark City expansion for it and it adds a lot of really cool stuff. So I'll stop there. I did discover that there's actually a comic shop 2 blocks from my house now.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's not huge. It's a small shop, and it's kind of like a second store for one of the stores that are in the city. So they don't have a lot of stuff there. They've got, you know, current stuff, and they've got a rather small back section. But I did manage to find some pretty cool back issues of Detective Comics, especially some that were written by Greg Rucka with Batman in it. So I'm pretty keen to get to those. So that was good. And other than that, just sort of catching up on some awesome old Doom Patrol comics in preparation for this episode, realizing that I actually had the single issue of 105. So that was cool to flick through and read and see it in all its glorious, majestic color and see some really hilariously outdated ads for things that, you know, let the youth and the young readers know that policeman, he is your friend. And that, and you know, they don't just chase after to crooks and stuff like that. You know, they'll help you rescue your cat from the tree and, you know, help you from evacuate a burning building. And such wonderful messages. And you know, the other fun stuff, like for $1.50, you could get basically a gigantic box full of, you know, knights and catapults and a toy castle and just some really good old fun stuff. So, you know, like a New York Mets official wristwatch for $9.95. It's like,
That would have been pricey back then.
Yeah. So, you know.
In a 12-cent comic.
Yeah, that's right. So, that's pretty much been the week for me. I won't bore everyone with work details because, oh my God, work. Anyway, I could go on about Marvel Legendary, but I won't because I think I hear the doom clock.
Oh, yes, you do. You have keen ears.
I do. That's about the only good thing that's working these days. So, the Doom Clock is telling us that it has been 4 years and 45 weeks since the last actual Doom Patrol book, which was issue 22 of Volume 5, the Keith Giffen, Matthew Clark run, cover dated July 2011, on sale May 4th of that same year. So won't be long till we get to the 5-year anniversary of that. It's a bit depressing. And just over 7 months ago, or 31 weeks, we had the team appearing in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. All-Star Section 8 had them in a big double-page splash shot of all the Justice League-type heroes meeting up, and JLU 12 had Stargirl recruiting Robot Man onto her team for their next mission. But this week in Doom Patrol history, back in 1968, for 12 cents American, saw the release of issue 119 of Volume 1 from Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiati. And this issue was titled In the Shadow of the Great Guru, and it saw a mystic guru turn Robot Man into a pacifist. And when the rest of the team tried to investigate, the guru used post-hypnotic signals to have them all turn on each other.
Ooh.
So, you know, sort of delving into that whole hippie era and vibe and, you know, making them all out to be evil, of course, because hippies are evil.
Hippies are evil.
Yeah, they are. That's it for the Doom Clock this week. So this week on Doomsplaining, we are looking at issues 105 and 106 from 1966. So the first issue went on sale June 2nd of that year and cover dated August of 1966 for the cover price of 12 cents for 32 pages. That's insane. That's such good value. The editor for both was Murray Boltonoff, and the writer and artist team for both was Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. And this first issue we're looking at was titled The Honeymoon of Terror, which I have a bit of an issue with, but we'll get through the synopsis first before I start venting. So we open with an intro page reminding us that Elastigirl is gone from the team now that she's married to Steve Dayton, yet we see all of them facing Mr. 103 in three different forms. In one, he's a robot-looking being. The next, he's a flame-throwing monster. And the third one, he's an aeroplane of some sort. Good old Mr. 103. So after a brief character bio panel, we're shown Cliff and Larry fighting over Larry not sharing the Sunday newspaper. And Chief bursts in to break it up, knowing that they're actually just missing Rita and taking it out on each other.
They're not enjoying the sausage fest.
No, they're not. So meanwhile, at Steve and Rita's mansion, he's preparing to go to work on a Sunday, of all days, while Rita is busy using her embiggening powers to help the servants around the place. Like, one of them has a food cart stuck in their doorway, so she, you know, has a giant hand to help him out. And there's a worker repairing the chimney on the roof, and as he falls, Rita, you know, grows huge to save that guy. Of course, Steve Dayton being Steve Dayton, he complains about this.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like Rita using her powers around his staff. So she tells him she's going to go shopping instead, but she's actually snuck off to join Robot Man and Negative Man on a new mission. And Neg Man explains that Chief's newly developed super Geiger counter has detected heavy radioactivity in an area where there shouldn't be any. So they're investigating it for him.
In their bitchin' rocket car.
It's an awesome rocket car. It's so cool.
Wouldn't you want a dinky toy of that?
Oh, if only. Oh, man, yeah. That'd be so cool. And as awesome. This bitchin' car is racing along, something goes wrong and something gets caught in the engine of their fancy car, and Cliff pulls over, and as he investigates, he discovers a bird is caught in there, but it's actually Beast Boy. So he decided to catch up to them and got sucked into the exhaust of the car somehow. Poor old Gar. So after the usual spat of insults between Cliff and Gar, the team arrives at an empty warehouse, and they start looking for the source of the radiation. Gar transforms into a snake, and he goes down through a ventilation shaft, discovering a staircase heading deeper underground. And at this point, Cliff finds a window that, shockingly, has both a Venetian blind and a window shade.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all.
So Cliff, being curious, he decides to see what happens if he pulls down the shade, and it triggers an opening in the floor to appear. Up there for thinking, Cliff. The team descends down into the dark, and Beast Boy decides to help out. He turns himself into a swarm of fireflies to light their way. So that's quite helpful of him. And before long, they discover a lair underground, and Neg Man remarks that it looks like the lobby of the Hilton Hotel stuck in a coal mine. So There's like statues and a grand piano, and it looks very swish down there. Cliff discovers another tunnel, and as he enters it, he gets zapped by some energy. And at this point, Chief chimes in via Cliff's portable communication device, and he tells the team that in order to get past this deadly energy trap, they need to crawl on all fours.
Oh, they're stuck in a video game from the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how Chief figured that one out, but yeah. Before long, the patrol encounters someone on a treaded vehicle, and it's got a massive laser beam attached to the front of it, and they're carving out a new tunnel. And suddenly, the driver of this vehicle's detected the team, and he hits a button, and another laser beam launches up and starts attacking the team. And before long, the driver of this machine reveals himself to be John Dubrovny, Mr. 103 himself. So the team goes on the attack.
Hello, holy hair tonic, it's Mr. 103.
Oh, such great lines. So one, as the team attacks, 103 turns himself into helium to float out of their reach, and then turns himself into lead paint and, you know, covers Larry's bandages in it so he can't release an Eggman. And he then turns himself into nitrous oxide to make Rita and Beast Boy collapse in fits of laughter. 103 then escapes after turning into jellied gasoline and throwing flaming parts of himself at Cliff. He turns into a kite and soars away on the heated air that was caused by this, you know, jellied gasoline monster he turned into. So he's quite agile in his thinking about what he needs to do to get away in a very short amount of time. So the team, you know, defeated, return back to Patrol HQ, and they're stumped as to what exactly Mr. 103 is up to. And Rita has returned back to Dayton Manor, and of course she and Steve are fighting over the fact that he found out she went on another adventure with the team. Because he's a bit old school in that, you know, well, she's a married woman now, her place is in the home, which,
yeah, dickbag.
So the next day, the patrol are headed into a museum, which they realize is located above the tunnel that 103 was digging. And as they enter, they notice a huge meteorite is on display. And at this point, 103 bursts through a skylight, and he's in the form of a wooden glider.
With a face.
With a face. Because, of course, how else would you make an entrance? And then he monologues and reveals his dastardly plan that the meteor may contain more unknown elements for him to absorb into his body, making him even more evil and unstoppable. So the team, they're on the offensive. Gar transforms into a woodpecker, trying to sever one of Mr. 103's wooden wings. But of course, he turns the wings into sulfur. So Gar sort of flies away, half burnt. Cliff tries to punch 103, and he's met with a literal steel jaw. So he tries charging, and 103 becomes neon gas, which Robot Man falls through. 103 then changes into a robotic-looking human energy transmitter, which was the big robot form we saw at the start. And he becomes too hot for Rita to grab, even in her giant form. And then this robot form starts using sound waves to disarm Larry, who was carrying the exotic ray gun that Chief invented for their previous encounter with Mr. 103 that kind of locked him in place. I think when we last saw him, he was stuck in the shape of a bear.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, which was a bit embarrassing.
They kicked his bare ass.
Well played, sir. Well played. So the sound waves knock this ray gun out of Larry's hand, and then the sound waves begin to increase and is almost about to incapacitate the team by shattering their eardrums. Oddly enough, the actual negative being, the energy being from Larry, comes out and tries to fire this same ray gun at 103, but its freeze rays are warped by the meteor, which is why 103 is after it. But as Cliff comes to again, he starts smashing the meteor into tiny chunks, just to show Mr. 103 that he's not going to get away with it all. Mm. So, of course, Mr. 103 escapes yet again in a cloud of gas. So the final scenes show the team frustrated in defeat back at HQ, realizing that Mr. 103 got away with actually one of the chunks that Robot Man created in his destructive rampage. So thanks, Cliff. And Steve and Rita still haven't properly arranged their actual honeymoon. And as she heads off to check in on Beast Boy for some reason, it's really weird. She has a fight with Steve, and then she just sort of vanishes, and then she goes to where Beast Boy lives, and she turns into a giant form, and she's watching Nicholas Galtree, who is Beast Boy's guardian, through one of the windows, and you just see her gigantic eye.
It's very subtle, isn't it? It's
not at all. So thankfully, Galtree has his back to the window while he's on the phone, and he's, you know, getting money a lot of money transferred from Gar's own bank account into his own. So he's stealing. He's definitely stealing from Gar. And
yeah.
Reed is determined to do something, but we don't know what yet.
There was a little bit earlier in the story where Gar was talking about his guardian being a dirtbag, and the rest of the team were arguing, but Rita was actually thinking about it. So.
And of course, the team are pretty much of the opinion that, well, we've heard this story before, and we still don't quite buy it. So, So, the backup story. There is a backup story in this, and it's the final part of the Robot Man solo story, the almost the prequel that shows him, you know, on a rampage before he met up with the rest of the team.
It's the superfluous adventure before he joined the Doom Patrol.
Yes. So he's on a rampage to find the man that turned him into his robot form. And now, you know, all the cops are in pursuit of him. There are a couple of memorable scenes in which we're seeing Cliff remove his own arm to fight a bunch of cops over on Take a Drink. He literally yanks his arm off and swings it round while surrounded by cops and, you know, sends them all flying. When he's escaping underground through the sewers and he's trying to make his way back up to street level, he realizes that he can't quite reach, so he then removes one of his legs and activates the magnetic foot in order to latch on to the sewer drain lid and, you know, push it open. So everyone take another drink. You know, two drinks for the price of one story. And eventually Cliff actually makes it to Chief's building where he discovers his future teammates, and he's about to throttle the life out of Chief. And he says, you know, no, I'm the one that created you, and, you know, we should use your weird powers to do right by mankind. And Cliff's reluctantly joining the team. And then it cuts. That's where My Greatest Adventure 80 sort of, you know, kicks in. So the backup story is okay, but
they forgot one of the plots, because in all these backups he was going mad because something had gone wrong and the chief needed to fix it. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Now they're like, oh, he just needed to hook up with his pals. So when he comes in to attack the chief, he actually finds Larry instead.
Yeah, like, that's right. And Rita's, you know, trying to calm them all down. And yeah, it kind of, it was interesting, but I would have preferred a different backup story altogether rather than Robot Man's origin, which we kind of already knew. But anyway, overall, Paul, what did you think of this issue?
It's terrific. It's like everything that Mr. 103 turns into, and he turns into so many things. Every half a page he changes into something else. And he really kicks their butt.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I got quite excited because I thought he's after this other element. That means he's on the verge of becoming Mr. 104, as he's known.
I wondered that too. Yes.
In the 80s. Anyway.
So, yeah. I really like the interactions between Steve and Rita in this, because she's adamant that, you know, just because she's married, she's not going to go and become, a simple housewife and do as he says all the time, you know, and he's still keen on being the fifth richest man on the world. There's a panel that made me laugh out loud that when she's saying, you know, do you really have to go into work today on a Sunday? He replies with, suppose I stayed at home. Pretty soon I wouldn't be the fifth richest man in the world. I'd sink to sixth or eighth. You'd be ashamed of poor me. And you know, what would become of us? It's
like, yeah.
Really, dude? You know? You think you got bigger problems there than that. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was some wacky 60s action, and it was so well done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit, he's written as a dick. And that's got to be deliberate. And, you know, even on the front page, he's contrasted with the team who are, you know, they're all freaks, but it's got the intro page and it says he's, you know, as rich as Rockefeller, handsome as Cary Grant. You know,
yes.
So he doesn't fit in.
No.
And they describe him as filthy rich.
Yeah. They're filthy rich ally. Yes. Uh-huh. See, I can never I just can't accept Mento as a proper member of the Doom Patrol. I don't think I ever will. I think he redeemed himself in my eyes somewhat in that Teen Titans story we looked at a while back, where you know he was out to avenge Rita's death and you know find out what happened to the rest of the team and that was nice to see. You know, that was a cool redemption story for him as far as I read it. But yeah, 9 times out of 10, he's just a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the backup, there's a great panel where all the cops are shooting at Cliff, and it looks like, you know, there's bullets and explosions going off, and Cliff's just standing in the middle of them all, going, you know, soaking it all up. You know the one?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And that's just before he rips his arm off, too. So
yes.
I don't quite get...
While finding a piece of metal, I just rip my arm off. And
yeah, I don't quite get why he did that and why he didn't just rush at them and attack them himself. But, you know, I suppose it all knocked them back and helped him escape from their attack. But it was an interesting end to that backup story, which has been going for a few issues as well. So
yeah.
It was nice to see them finally wrap that up.
So, yeah. It was a bit redundant, that story.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't really add much at all.
It's almost as if they had 8 pages at the back of the comic that they didn't know what to do with. Being yes. a bit cynical?
Well, look, harsh but fair. Harsh but fair.
Anyway, shall we move on to issue 106?
Take it, Paul.
Okay. So, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, September 1966 cover date, July 21st, 1966 is when it actually came out, 12 cents. Same creative team, 2 stories, one's called Blood Brothers, and the other's called The Private World of Negative Man, and it's got a cover by Bob Brown, not the Green Senator. Okay. And on the cover, I got excited. I thought it was Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man. But they tricked me.
It's Mineral, Mineral, Mineral Man. Yeah, it's very reminiscent of AVM Man, yeah.
Yeah, so you see Mr. 103 and he looks like a bald monster on the front and he's like half lead, well, a quarter lead, half diamond, and the rest of him's lava. He's got lava pants on.
Yes.
I love your pants. Anyway, so you get a splash page with, the chief is testing weaponry on the Doom Patrol.
So what a bastard.
Yeah. So he's invented a new gun that uses some sort of plastic ray. I don't know. It's scientific. Don't worry about it. He's shooting Robot Man, and that's immobilizing. And then he shoots Rita, and she's got this outfit on that he's made, which stopped. And it's made from that meteorite that they smashed. Ooh. From the other star system that Mr. 103 was after. So, they're sort of engineering something that Mr. 103 has already developed. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, Rita has to run because Steve's going to be home in 20 minutes and she hasn't started dinner. Think about that. And she runs home and, the butler's like, we didn't know what you wanted. The cook didn't know what you wanted for dinner. And she's like, I'm going to give the cook a night off and I'm going to cook.
Yeah. Right.
But we get some great housekeeping where she's boiling the potatoes, starting the chops, tossing the salad, opening a can of artichokes, and she can't find the can opener, so she embiggens one hand and karate chops into the artichoke can. Yeah. And then she's opening a bottle of wine and the cork breaks in half and gets stuck, so she shrinks down and boots herself into the wine bottle to push the cork through. Mm. And then they're having dinner at one end of a really, 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 really long table in a great big dining room. And they're getting a bit snuggly. A
little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
A bit intimate.
Mm. Yeah. And then she's actually buttering him up because she wants to talk to him about Gar, Logan, Beast Boy. Oh. And Steve, massive dick that he is, jumps up and she falls off his lap onto the floor. And he says, I don't care what happens to that teenage brat. Yeah.
Harsh but fair.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm certain that Beast Boy's guardian, Galtry, is stealing from the kid's inheritance. And he's like, forget it. It's just a dodge. He just wants sympathy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Anyway, so she's ticked off. So she says, I'm leaving. And she walks out on him. So, a few days into the marriage, that's pretty good.
Yeah, because this is, what, only two or three issues after they've got married. So it's
two issues after they got married and they haven't had their honeymoon yet. So
yeah, I still haven't mentioned my problem with that. But anyway, we'll get there.
Yes. Anyway, so she goes back to the Doom Patrol and they decide that a bit of action wouldn't help. So anyway, we find, meanwhile, there's a graveyard and there's a great big, it's a really, really big gravestone for
it's
Mr.
gigantic. It's literally man-sized.
Yeah, it's like a mess. It's, you know, like in Fast and the Furious 5, the safe that they drag through the streets?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, Mike.
I've seen the first one. That was pretty cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, it's about that size. Anyway, and it says M. Ross 103 Division, so it's a sort of war tribute. But, I mean, the 103 is a bit of a clue because a mysterious figure approaches and opens it up, and inside it's Mr. 103's new lair, and he's got all sorts of machinery, and he's sort of dousing himself with gases in this weird tube thing. Mm. There's pipes and everything, and he is turning himself into someone with the extra element. Yes,
comic book science at its finest.
Yeah, and this guy who's coming to see him is delivering him money hidden in bunches of flowers.
Yes.
So he's being funded. But he says the guy who's providing the money wants to meet with you. And he's, you know, Mr. 103 is pretty annoyed. He turns into a hammer. And then he turns into a giant pair of tongs and grabs this guy. And then he calms down and realizes he does need the money. And who's providing the money? It's Mr. Gultry. Gar Logan's dirtbag guardian.
Oh, what scum.
Yeah. Anyway, they hit it off because they're scumbags. And, Gultry agrees that he wants to work for Mr. 103, who is pretty stoked by that.
Well, when Gultry says, "I want the Doom Patrol dead and finished," Mr. 103 has... Well, he shows that he needs some dental work to begin with, but then he's busy laughing about the fact that, you know, he says, "That's something that I would have paid you for. You know, I live for nothing else but to destroy that team." So
They're on the same page. So, yes. And not only does he want Gar dead, he wants the whole Doom Patrol dead because they are protecting Gar, he realizes. Mm. Anyway, so the Doom Patrol, they're off to a sports arena because there's an atomic energy surge. So, the chief's measuring... And they walk in, and it's a trap. It's really well organized. So Robot Man gets caught by a great big magnet. Negative Man gets trapped in a great big lead dome that drops from the ceiling. And and we're seeing that you can deal with Rita and Beast Boy in the same go, so they get gassed and they pass out.
Oh, God.
And Mr. 103 is there in his... He really has that like sort of 60s idea of future sci-fi outfit because he's got like... wide shoulders and the sort of almost a skirt-like length of jacket and a great big symbol on his chest. Is it 103 with the Adam symbol below it?
So just in case you weren't sure who he was, the minute you see him, you're like, "Oh, right, that guy."
Yeah, and he's got bad hair.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and in part two it's called Mentor Meets the Atom Master. Wonder what's going to happen. Anyway, Cliff is... dangling from this magnet from the ceiling, but then he realizes he's got magnetic feet, so he turns on his magnetic feet and they pull him towards another bit of metal, and then he bounces off there, does some flips, and then starts fighting Mr. 103. Has he learned nothing?
it doesn't look good.
No. He's like, "I'm going to headbutt him," and then he hurts his head on the metal torso, and then he's going, "Well, I'm going to punch him," and then Mr. 103 turns into clay and Cliff is stuck, and then he's like punching with one fist, then he puts a foot in, and then pretty soon all his limbs are stuck inside Mr. 103, which is pretty inappropriate.
Yeah, a little bit.
Meanwhile, there's a disgruntled husband and he's gone to see the chief saying, "Where's my wife?" It's Mento.
And he's in full Mento costume now, too.
He means business. He's got he's got gloves, he's got his helmet, he's got a little cape.
Mm. Yep.
What a tool. Anyway. And he's telling Chief off for letting Rita get into danger, and Chief's like, "Well, why don't you go and do something about it?" And he says, "Well, I'll go and finish him off." So he sends him off to where they are. Cliff has recovered, and he's spinning Mr. 103 around and chucks him. And just as he's about to hit this great big pillar. He turns into gas. And then you see Cliff, who's absolutely knackered from...
He looks worn out, yeah. He's gasping and puffing and panting, which must be pretty hard for a robot to do.
Yeah, and they're at a sports arena, so all this is taking place in a wrestling arena, so it's actually pretty WWF, because in the next minute, Mr. 103 is turned into a giant lead thing, is pouncing on top of him and slamming his head on the ground, and then he pulls Cliff's head off. Drink, everybody, drink.
I'd say half a drink, because his head's still connected.
It's connected by wires, yes. And so his head's sort of dangling on his chest now, and then Mr. 103 tries to body slam him in lead form. When suddenly he gets pushed up in the air by Mentor's mind control or helmet that allows him to do things like that.
Yay, Mentor.
Yay. And but Mr. 103 turns into acid and comes at Mentor, and Mentor looks terrified.
Yeah.
Kind of gratifying. And then Mr. 103 turns into like a spring creature, so he's going boing, boing and grabbing Mentor's helmet and crushing it. Mm. Yeah, take that, Mentor. Yeah. And then he turns into a living, breathing atomic pile. And so he's got like control rod body and his head's all electric.
Mm.
And then, but Larry has the freeze ray.
Yes.
Which Chief was working on, and now it works. And it freezes him in that form. And so he can't do anything. And Larry picks him up and is chucking him to Cliff. But Mr. 103 is, with his electric head, is going, no, stop, I'm dying, you don't understand. And he's saying, you need to free me or I'm going to die. And then he promises not to be evil and to surrender. And they go, okay. And the chief tells them the secret to unfreezing him. And so they chuck some water on him. And, you know, one panel later, he's leaving and telling them, suck it. He turns himself into a balloon, and you see this balloon flying out the window laughing at them.
Yeah. It's like a Joker balloon almost, with that huge maniacal grin on its face. Yeah.
And he said, you really believe my pledge? You fools, such childish mentalities. Yes. But then he tells them that Galtry's behind the money that he needs. So, ooh, oversharing there. And that leads to a two-panel epilogue where they're saying to the detectives that they want to take care of Gar Logan now. Mm. This is Mentor and Rita, and that Galtry's a thief. And Gar, he's had a rough life. He's suspicious and wondering what's in it to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rita's being very affectionate, and Mentor's being Mentor.
Yeah. At least Rita means well. She's saying, in a few days, we'll be able to free you from that man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the main story. And we start a new backup in this one, which is called The Private World of Negative Man. Ooh. And we're seeing Larry as a regular human testing this plane. Flying into some radiation waves and turning into Negative Man. And this is a real unpacking of Larry's origin, which is, again, something we didn't really need. It's almost like they have 8 pages to fill. So Larry comes back down to Earth, and he sees the plane that's come to rescue his plane has a wheel that's stuck, and it's about to crash when it tries to land. So he suddenly unleashes the Negative Man energy, which he didn't know he had, and that helps guide the plane in. And then people come to see him and they freak out because he's got this skull radioactive face.
Yeah.
The army don't know what to do with him. So he's sort of stuck away, and his family can't come and see him. His mum's there, and he covers up the camera so she can't see that he's all see-through and skeletal. Mm. And they go to the expert on solving this thing, and it's the chief, and he has these bandages which solve the problem. Yeah, and Larry is like, oh, yay, I'm fine, I can wear the bandages, and he's out in town. People keep calling him a freak, and then he decides that he wants to come back and, he's on his own at the end, so where will he end up?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how that story will pan out over the next few issues.
Mm. Yeah. So this is, I really like it that Mr. 103 is... irredeemable.
Yeah, pretty much. And Goltry's just as bad now too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he promises to do the right thing and it lasts half a panel.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm amazed it went that long. So
So he escapes and he has new powers now and and that's the end of the story. And but some good art here that he turns into lots of things. They never tire of finding exciting things to draw in this comic.
That's right. Yeah, that's one of the great things about it. I mean, as you said, when 103 appears, he's like changing into something different every couple of panels, which is just fantastic and so creative. You know, it's great.
Yeah. Maybe that's one of the things they should do with the Doom Patrol is just bring them into a, like a digital first series, which is set in the 60s. You know, just do more crazy adventures and draw whatever the hell they can think of. And
That'd be cool.
Wouldn't it? Cool.
Yeah.
I'd like Jeff Parker to write that. Wouldn't it be good?
Yeah, and Doc Shaner to draw it. Yeah, now we're talking. Sorry, getting a bit excited there. my issue with the title of 105, Honeymoon of Terror, there's no actual honeymoon.
No, it's the honeymoon of not going away.
The honeymoon of procrastination and making plans but not actually doing anything. I mean, Steve talked about taking them away, but it doesn't happen in either issue. So it's like, okay, a lot of talk, but no real result there. You know?
Yeah. And there's some, you know, I like the Rita really stands up to Steve, and that's very cool.
Yes.
You know, very cool. And after we think, oh no, she's being a domestic goddess just for him, and it's, you know, it's really just to persuade him to adopt Beast Boy.
That's true.
Yeah, but Steve, you know, tries to tell her what's what. They'll need a new member to replace you, he says to her, and she's not having that. She's like, who's leaving the Doom Patrol? I'm leaving you.
Yeah. In your face, Dayton.
Yeah.
So,
and it's probably worth mentioning that there's been a retcon in the future that basically said that Steve used his mind control powers to get Rita.
Yeah.
That's probably a timely time to mention that because, you know, of what we know of her character and what we know of his character, their relationship makes very little sense.
True. Yeah. And he did do a lot of the pursuing in the earlier issues we looked at. So it kind of doesn't surprise me that future writers have said, well, this man with this, you know, mental ability may have, you know, planted the seed that, you know, she kind of liked him as well. And then he took more and more liberties with that ability as their relationship went on. So, yeah, which again is another reason why I don't like the character of Mento. So, you know, just a creepy dude. And I can't wait till we get to the Volume 5 run where Rita kind of gets her revenge on Steve for doing those sorts of things to him. And really lets loose and is not backwards and coming forwards with her anger about the whole thing. So, yeah. Yes. But, yeah, I really like this two-part. It was lots of good fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Shall we move on to the mailbag O'Doom?
Let's do it.
This week, we asked everybody to give us their answer to the question, what character or team is in most need of a rebirth? And we're defining rebirth as getting back to their classic version, and we wanted to make the point that it could be from any company. It didn't have to be DC, otherwise it'd be a bit limited.
Yes.
And so the first person we heard from was Nicholas at NickRDE on Twitter, and he said, Doom Patrol aside, I'd love to see a bit of the bloated Avengers and X-Men titles trimmed down a bit.
Hear, hear. I agree with that. I mean, yes, there's so many of them because they make money for Marvel, but yeah, it's a bit hard to keep up with them. Dean Hacker at DHacker615 said Legion of Superheroes, teenagers from the future.
Yeah, a lot of people like to see the Legion back done right. We heard from Silver and Gold, who's SNG podcast. That's a podcast about Booster Gold and Captain Atom. Silver and Gold, get it? Yeah.
Yep.
And he said, Captain Atom and no one else. Seriously.
Fair enough. Cameron Williams at Wasgo wrote in and his answer was, Superman, I feel like they've moved too far away from the neck-snapping classic.
Ooh. Bit of editorial there. We heard from Frack of the Endless, who's at Fractures, our good friend Frack. And he said, Teen Titans, Firestorm, Deathstroke, Hawkman, Lobo, Suicide Squad, all of the Robins and Birds of Prey. So he doesn't want for much.
No, no.
And then he also said, we also need an ongoing Doom Patrol and Legion of Superheroes comic.
Yeah. Yeah, good choices. At Ostrakus1 wrote in, and this week he's called Milky Wet Knave Tech, and he said, the X-Men family, they've become unrecognizable to me, and that makes me sad. Why does Angel have weird energy wings these days?
Does he?
I had no idea. I picked up X-Men again, sometime last year, and then that series wrapped, and I was like, you know, I don't need to go back. It's like, eh. That's a fair call, I think.
We have from Bob Ornelas at Slurmo, our good mate Slurmo, and he said, unholy hell, it is a mess and has been for years. X-Men, he's talking about. Mm. And he says, I read the odd issue collection free digicode, but to be fair, I only read JL 3001 from the Big Two monthly, so I guess my wallet vote means all Big Two books need a rebirth.
Wow, all of them? Carl D. Smith at Carl Smith Writer on the Twitters. He said, Fantastic Four. I want cosmic science adventure and family infighting.
It's a bit of a wasteland if you're a fan of Fantastic Four at the moment. A
little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
We heard from Katie Solovan, who's at Katie Scarlet 94. Hi, Katie. She said, Teen Titans, Stephanie Brown, Dick Grayson, Barbara Gordon, all the dead Robins, and Superman. How many dead Robins are there?
That's a good question, actually. I didn't think there were that many.
No idea.
Bit of homework for us now. Great. Thanks, Katie. Thanks so much. She also asks, can we add in people who don't exist at the moment? Right. Let's say no.
No. We have from Jess Camacho at Camacho Jess, and she said Batgirl.
I'm guessing Jess might not be a fan of the Batgirl of Burnside, maybe? So I don't know. We heard from Karthik Kakarala, who is Hero Sword Welder this week on Twitter. Okay. He's not wielding it, he's welding it. He said, for Marvel, it would be Psylocke. We got so close with Uncanny X-Force. For 2000 AD, maybe Judge Anderson. And for DC, he suggested Batwing or Simon Baz because they've both been neglected.
Simon Baz is just wasted.
Yeah, I don't even know what's happened to Simon. All this hype around this new Green Lantern and then nothing for quite some time. Karthik continues, maybe Xavier, because I'm not sure if Charles Xavier's back or still dead or what. Bloody X-Men. And he finished with definitely a bunch of people in The Walking Dead. Right. Okay.
Yes, we heard from Reggie, who very poetically said, Teen Titans FFS.
Right. That's straight to the point. Yes, yes. We also heard from Moby1, at Shmoby1, and he said, Elementals, Bill Willingham's awesome Comico series, before they decided to publish swimsuit issues.
That was a great, great series, and it's caught up in legal shenanigans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Bill Willingham is never going to get the rights back because he assaulted the guy who has the rights.
Wow. Holy jeez. That's very interesting to know.
Yeah. There was an interview with Bill Willingham on a podcast called Non-Canonical, where he went into all of that, and it's hilarious.
Wow.
He said, I can actually say it's assault now because enough time has passed.
Oh, good, good. That's good to know, Bill. Jeez.
Oh, dear. We have from Martin Gray, at Mark Gray, and he said, I would say the Legion, but Dr. Ange will have that angle covered. So how about Primal Force? The Laymen were a fascinating bunch, but sadly cancellation meant they had a terrible end to their story. Bring them back for another chance. And we also heard from Doug Savisha, and he said, I speak for myself and possibly for some others, WFD pod listeners, when I say Doom Patrol, the whole patrol, or Cyborg.
Yeah, we'll just go with Doom Patrol. Cyborg's got a book, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Mark.
And we had one really nice comment from at FKA Jason, and he said, I've really been enjoying your podcast. It helps fill the void in my soul while I also wait for Doom.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Very cool of you.
Very cool. And, we got an email from Dr. Ange on this matter.
Dr. Ange, he's the man.
Dr. Ange. Hey guys, this is a long email, so apologies for my rantings. Indeed, Paul, it was an old email that I said that this was the story where I felt things were being weird for weird's sake, seeing the army guys bouncing on balls, talking of green pubic hair. We weren't in Kansas City anymore, that was for sure. That said, one of the things that came out of in rereading these issues for the podcast was how comically self-referential the story was. Between the origin of Flex, which is evocative of the Charles Atlas ad, to the weapons of the Men of Nowhere, all items that you could order from comic ads back in the day. I remember the X-ray specs and the atomic smoke bombs, not bongs. Anyway, to the ad speak of the Men from Nowhere, it all brings Ange back to summer days reading comics in the backyard and trying to convince my dad to order me 300 army men for a buck. Love it.
Come on, Mr. Ange Sr. Don't hold out.
And the Candlemaker appearance at the end is the cherry on the sundae, knowing where the comic ends up. As for the rebirth question, it's something of a loaded question. I should say Supergirl, obviously. But the truth is, I like the way her last series ended by Kay Perkins, Mike Johnson, and Emanuela Lupacino. I don't want Supergirl Reborn. I'd like the book to pick up right where it left off. I also should say Legion of Superheroes, but DC has dropped the ball so badly in recent years with the Legion of Superheroes, I think we need a breather or a bulletproof creative team and concept. I know the popular answer will be the Doom Patrol. But I'm going off the ranch. I'm going to say Teen Titans. The new 52 Titans was awful. That team shouldn't be dark look at heroics. It should be optimistic look at the young trying to build a brighter future. It should be legacy heroes. God damn it, it should even include a good Donna Troy. Wow. So DC needs to scrub away the grime and give me back a Titans I want to read. Ooh.
Wow.
Telling it like it is.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
I did think long and hard about this because obviously, you know, I would say definitely Doom Patrol, but that's not going to surprise anyone. But one team I wouldn't mind seeing back, and I'm kind of surprised that Marvel haven't done this, is bringing back Power Pack.
Power Pack.
They were four siblings living in New York City that got basically superpowers from these alien costumes because they saved a life of an alien that crashed on their planet. And they were just really cool. And they were, you know, off in space fighting evil aliens. They were involved in some of the big crossovers, like in the X-Men Inferno crossover at the time. The oldest brother, Alex Power, he actually ended up joining the Future Foundation and was, you know, seen quite a bit in that series and Fantastic Four as well. And I just think, I'm kind of surprised that with Marvel's efforts to, I guess, open themselves up to a wider audience with things like, you know, Squirrel Girl and Hellcat and Miss Marvel, why they haven't kind of gone back to that sort of simple fun. Because I remember reading that when I was a kid, and the cool thing to me at the time was that these are kids just like me. And, you know, they're fighting villains and saving the city and going into outer space. And it was just a lot of cool fun. So I'm kind of surprised that they actually haven't reappeared in Marvel's recent efforts. So, and researching that and looking back, I kind of was like, man, I wouldn't mind reading all those again, just for a bit of a nostalgia kick. So I may have bookmarked some things on eBay. But anyway...
right.
Yeah, so I think it would be cool to see them back. I mean, the older sibling Alex has kind of inherited the powers from his siblings again, but when they were originally teamed, they each had a different superpower, and occasionally they would swap costumes and swap powers around, so they'd have to come up with brand new code names for themselves. So I thought it was, you know, a kind of cool, you know, fun idea, and I think it would be awesome to see them back again. So yeah, how about you, Paul?
Wow, I wouldn't have thought of Power Pack. I think I'm with Ange. I think the Teen Titans, I think there's a lot to be said that the Teen Titans is a barometer for the health of DC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the Teen Titans is good, the line's really good.
Okay.
Yeah, so what does that tell you?
Yeah.
Right.
So I think they need to work on the Teen Titans in some way. I mean, really get them back to their basics and not what they're doing.
I find it interesting that you think the Titans are the barometer for DC's health.
Yeah, I could change my mind and lie about it later. But
okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And they need to sort out this Robin thing.
Yeah.
There is too many Robins. I mean, I know everyone's someone's favourite, but, you know, you can't have any sort of fresh start with that many Robins around.
Yeah, especially now that they have the entire book called We Are Robins, and it's, you know, an entire street gang of kids running around saving the day.
So yeah.
Which is a nice idea and that, but I think we've got enough Robins. You know, now we're going to have all the Robins fans coming after us. Great.
Look out.
Yes.
We got iTunes reviews. Wilfred put out the call for iTunes reviews and people obliged. And, you know, I think we've been remiss because we've had some in the past and we haven't really dwelt on them much. So I think we've mentioned a couple of them, but let's revisit.
Okay.
So now one of the amazing things about iTunes is how stupid it is and it's regionally grouped. So we get our American reviews and Canadian reviews all grouped together. We can't see them. So
yes.
So Doug Savita was kind enough to send me a screenshot of the reviews we have in America.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug. So we had we've heard this one before, but Matty BRB, is that Matt Roberts?
I'm going to take a wild gander and say yes.
Yeah, and he said, this is a great podcast. It's even better if you're drinking a giant can of Foster's while listening, because we're Australian.
Yep, and that's the only beer we have here.
Yeah. We also heard from Lapine is me, Mike.
Mike.
And he gave it 5 stars and said, the only podcast about DP you need. And he said, this podcast brought to light the awesomeness of the Doom Patrol for me. Without this podcast to guide me, I would never have read the Doom Patrol. The hosts know their DP too. Must listen for anyone.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite a testimonial. Yeah. And our newest review, which came in just a few days ago, it says, expertly produced comic book podcast, 5 stars. And this review is from the irredeemable Shag.
Hey, Shag.
Hey, Shag. Thank you. And he said, such a great podcast. I consider myself a fair weather fan of the Doom Patrol. I've followed a few different eras of the team, but I'm not a diehard reader. I wasn't sure what to expect when I tried this podcast, but wow! In caps. First, the production values on this show are fantastic. Clever segments which keep the show moving, great music cues, and engaging hosts. Second, the comic reviews are always fun, and they balance celebrating the stories with poking some fun. Mm. Plus, the Australian accents just add a level of class. Yeah, we're so classy. great podcast, and I highly recommend it to anyone, even if you're only a casual fan of the Doom Patrol. Subscribe today. Thanks, Shag. What a great review.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And if we jump over to the British reviews on the British iTunes, which Martin Gray sent us.
Oh.
Yeah. So I didn't know about this one. We had one from Richie OB back in January of 2015.
Oh, thanks, Richie.
And he says, I rate it. And then he gave it 5 stars. He said, a show so staggeringly good that it convinced me to not only buy and read a whole bunch of Doom Patrol, but also to endeavor to live my life as animal, vegetable, mineral man would, namely with a shark for an arm. Hilarious host, great doom-splaining, and the all-important Doom Clock. What more could you want in relation to a show about waiting for the return of the Doom Patrol?
Well, other than a new Doom Patrol series? Yeah. Thanks, Richie.
Yeah, and we got a new review from Martilex, who's actually Martin Gray.
Ah, fancy and that. Says,
I'm in the mood for Doom. 5 stars, the Doom Clock is ticking. Since 1963, the Doom Patrol have been the world's strangest heroes. Since 2015, super sunny Australians Mike and Paul have been doom-splaining their stories. Well, where else do you would you do while you wait for DC Comics to give the team another shot at creators? I'll start that bit again. Well, what else would you do while waiting for the DC Comics to give the team another shot of greatness? The Doom Patrol has multiple incarnations in some very different runs, and no version is off limits. Well, maybe the John Byrne iteration. This isn't a current Doom Patrol. There isn't a current Doom Patrol comic, but there are hugely entertaining looks back at the adventures of Roboman, Elastic Girl, Negative Man, the Chief, Scott Fisher, and their many partners and proteges. Tune in. It's better than Dinner with Gargarax.
Wow, thanks very much, Martin. And thanks, everyone, for their iTunes review. That's very much appreciated.
Yeah, and we'd love to have some more. But also, if there's a podcast you enjoy that's not Waiting for Doom, leave them a review, because it's great to tell people that you like things. Mm. And, you know, as creators of a podcast, it's really exciting to hear that people say nice things about you.
Yes.
It validates my existence somewhat.
Okay. Well, that's it for the Mailbag of Doom. Thanks very much, everyone, for all your lovely comments. It really is really appreciated. We love hearing from you guys. So if you do want to get in touch with us, you can reach us via Wilfred, who is at WFDpod on Twitter. You can email us directly at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, or you can contact us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. Now, Paul, next week, it's our big 50th episode.
Yeah.
What excitement do we have planned?
It's a secret. Yeah, we've got an we don't know what we're doing. It's in an envelope. Someone wrote it down. So we'll open the envelope next week and find out what we're actually doing.
Right. Good-o. such professionals.
Yeah, but we will have a special guest on the show, someone who has never done a podcast before. So that could be a fun train wreck.
Unlike all the other apps. I mean, and what about the question of the week?
Next week, we want to know your answers to what's the most rewatchable comic book movie? It's not the best. It's not your favorite. It's the one you want to rewatch.
Okay.
A lot. Over and over.
When it's on TV, you have to sit down and watch it every time.
Yep.
Like me in Xanadu, although that's not a superhero movie. And I'm oversharing again. Okay. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for listening, guys. We'll catch you again next time on Waiting for Doom.
Bye-bye.